How many of you have heard the saying, out with the old and in with the new? Well, I feel like this has really been one of the ways that we have approached the Bible and the Christian faith in general. We've started the Bible through a year plan back in January, and I encouraged all of you to do that as part of the YouVersion Bible app here at the church. So you've probably been reading, hopefully you've been reading through that. And if you're up to speed, you're in Jeremiah somewhere, getting ready to finish up Jeremiah, and you've probably said, wow, the Old Testament sometimes just does not make sense. You know, I've heard people say, you know, I get through the first three books and then I give up because it's just too much and it's hard to comprehend. And in my own life, there's been times when I've looked at the Old and New Testament and I've scratched my head and think, how do we make sense of the two things, because they don't really seem to match up a lot of the times. I've heard people make comments like, well, that was the old covenant. Now we're in the new covenant, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. In more recent years, there's been a well-known preacher. I wasn't going to say his name, but I'm going to go ahead and do it because I love his father. And I like this guy, but this comment was kind of out there. Andy Stanley said this. He said, it's time that we face the facts and unhitch our faith and our practice from some of these Old Testament values that we can appreciate in their original context, but we really don't have any business dragging them into a modern context. And he went on to say, when questioned about this, I'm convinced for the sake of this generation and the next generation, we have to rethink our apologetics as Christians, and the less we depend on the Old Testament to prop up our New Testament faith, the better, because of where we are in the culture. And that was quoted from an article that Al Mohler wrote. Standy's comments kind of reflect, I think, the wrestling that many people have with the Old Testament and the New Testament. Sometimes we're tempted to see conflicting accounts. We see law in the Old Testament, grace in the New Testament. And I'll admit, Andy Stanley's received both criticism and support for his thoughts on how we should view the Old Testament. Today, at the end of service, we're going to recognize our seniors here at Hannah's Creek, and one of the things that we do is we give them a really nice study Bible. And so I thought today was perfect. As I studied through this, I thought, man, this is great. I hope that after today, when you get this Bible, seniors, you'll be able to look at it with a fresh set of eyes and understand how the whole thing is relevant to our lives. But I also hope that some of you who come through here who made mention to me before, well, I've never read the entirety of the Old Testament, I don't understand the Old Testament, hopefully after today you have a new set of eyes that helps you understand how the two work together. You see, we have this problem in society, and it's really not any different than it used to be. We have trouble reconciling the past with the present. You can see that in our culture right now. In some of the culture wars that we face, it's just a trouble with reconciling what has happened in this country in the past and where we are in the present. And I think the individuals that Jesus encountered in this Sermon on the Mount, as he preached this, were having the same struggles. They were trying to reconcile the past with what they were experiencing in the present. They were looking back to the scriptures as they knew them, the Old Testament, our Old Testament, known as the Tanakh to them. And then they were trying to listen to Jesus' teachings, and they didn't seem to align in their minds. And so that presented a problem to them. Winston Churchill said this, if we open a quarrel between the past and the present, we shall find that we have lost the future. And I'm afraid that if we open a quarrel between the past and the present, if we, like the original audience that Jesus encountered, if we start to look back to the Old Testament and see problems and raise an issue about it, we're going to lose some importance for our future. And what eventually ends up happening between Jesus and these religious leaders, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, is that they have a showdown. They start to quarrel about the past and the present. And Jesus makes it clear in the text that we cover today that there's no reason to quarrel. He's not coming to get rid of the old, but he gives us a better understanding of the Old Testament. I want you to flip over to Matthew chapter 5. And we're going to cover just verses 17 through 20 together this morning. I'm going to give you a heads up. I know we have some new faces with us. If you've been coming here to Hannah's Creek for a while, you can probably attest that I have a tendency sometimes to go kind of deep. I don't like to stay in the shallow end of the pool. When I was a kid, I didn't even like the shallow end. I liked to jump in the deep end. And this is what we're going to do this morning. We're really going to jump into the deep end of the pool. And we're going to look at a history, kind of a history of the Old Testament. Because I think if we understand the history of the Old Testament and some of the ways that it was understood, it helps us understand what Jesus was saying to us in this Sermon on the Mount. So here's some important info I think you need to know. Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, we start with this verse, and I do have them on the screen. Verse 17 says this, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." And if you flip over to chapter 7, verse 12, you'll find again this, "So in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." So we have this framing of the law and the prophets. And between these two verses is really the body of Jesus' sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. It's called an inclusio. That's what we call it in the academic world. So it's kind of the bookends. It frames the content of Jesus' sermon. And so today we start with that first verse, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law of the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to fulfill," and the few verses following it. And what I found this week, you know, I've read over this text several times, and I've actually preached through the Sermon on the Mount partially before at another ministry. But what I found this week is it was a little bit more tedious to work through this than I thought. And what really is at play here, there's three things that I think we need to pull from these texts, and I want you to write these things down. And I'll write them up here. So we're going to talk about expressions, essence, and end. So we're going to talk about expressions of the phrase, the law and the prophets, the essence of the law and the prophets, and the end of the law and the prophets, or the goal. So let's read these verses all together, and then I'll come back and kind of pick out some pieces that I think are important. "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, by any means will disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, if anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly, we will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." So there's four predominant ways when Jesus makes this statement, the law and the prophets. In the Jewish world, there was four predominant ways of thinking about this phrase. The first way was when people talked about the law, they were talking about the Ten Commandments. So sometimes in that culture, when they would use that term, the law or Torah, they were thinking of strictly the Ten Commandments. Another way that people understood this expression was the first five books of the Old Testament, sometimes called the Pentateuch or the Torah. These are the first five books of our Old Testament that Moses is credited with writing. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. That was known as the Torah. Torah means law in Hebrew. And then another way that this was understood, so you have Ten Commandments, you have the first five books, and then when people use the phrase the law and the prophets, in their mind, it meant the whole of Jewish scripture. So our Old Testament. And then there was this fourth idea, and we're going to spend a little bit more time on this one. When someone said the law and the prophets, they were talking about the oral or scribal law. And this was the most common understanding in Jesus' day. So when people in Jesus' day, specifically the religious leaders, the teachers of the law, the Pharisees, when they would say the law and the prophets, they were talking about the oral law. And I want to take a little bit deeper look at why that is. So in the Hebrew Bible, it was called the Tanakh, and it stands for Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. Those are the three categories of writings, The Torah was the first five books. The Nevi'im was the prophets, and that consists of the former prophets and the latter prophets. So you have Joshua, Judges, Samuel, Kings in the former prophets, and then Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and all of the minor prophets in the Nevi'im. And then the Ketuvim are the other writings. So the other writings are Psalms, Proverbs, Job, Song of Solomon, Ruth, Lamentations, and Ezra, Nehemiah, Chronicles. So when they say the Torah, the first five books, it's the written law. Now, the interesting thing about the first five books, it becomes known as the law, but only a portion of those five books contain laws. When you read the first five books together, what you find is that it tells a story. Inside of that story is obviously the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 20 has the Ten Commandments. And then you get to Leviticus, and there's 603 more commands. Okay? So now we have 613 laws. Well, in Jesus' time, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, they would take the 613 and basically try to define everything about that law or the phrases that they could. So the intent was that living according to these laws would allow the Israelites to show the world what God was like. So the teachers of the law, they developed this system where they would look at each law and clarify it. But as they clarified it, they developed more laws. Think about Jesus' interaction with these people. Think about how he interacts with the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, especially the story of the Good Samaritan. It's a perfect one. Remember, they're questioning Jesus, and Jesus tells them to love your neighbor, and they say, well, tell us who our neighbor is, because that's what they did. They wanted to define neighbor so they could make sure they got it right. And this is how this encounter with Jesus goes a lot of times. Think about when Jesus is walking through the fields with his followers and they're picking heads of grain. One of the things that these teachers of the law would do is they would define exactly how many kernels of grain you could carry on the Sabbath without it being considered work. And so what happened in the time of Jesus is we explode from 613 to now we have thousands, literally thousands of laws and commands that these people are expected to follow. And so the scribes, the teachers of the law, they develop this system, and the Pharisees are the guys that are trying to live out the system. And so the guidelines become extremely difficult for people to keep. So what happened then?